To you, I wish that Pastor and Mrs. Schmidt were here. I always love fellowshipping with them. Pastor Schmidt has preached series on prophecy at our church twice. So we had him up before he was the pastor here for 7 Sundays in a row where I preached the morning service, but he did the ABF and then evening. So we have known them now for over a decade and just love them. So anyway, hopefully we'll get to see them soon. It's good to be with you though and see you. And I'd like today, during this time to present the mission work that we'll be doing. So God has called us, as I mentioned briefly, to move from the pastorate into missions education. And what I'll do, you see I have my Packers shirt on representing us in the Philippines. Now, I can't use this first slide in all the churches we'll be in, but I feel like I'm probably safe in our state, unless maybe I'm near the Minnesota border, then I don't know. But anyway, so we're going to be traveling, and I'd like to tell you more about where we'll be going. So the Philippines is an archipelago of 7,000 islands. And Mark Kittrell, our president, started many years ago as a missionary, and he was for a while in the Philippines. And what he saw there was a great need for education. The Philippines is divided up into three parts. There's the northern part, or Luzon. There's the middle part, they call it the Visayas, and then there's the southern part called Mindanao. So the gospel, and I've been doing as much research as I can, there's not a lot of information out there, but the gospel first arrived, as far as I can tell, in the year 1900 on an island right next to where we are. So can you see near the bottom the boot? Okay, that's the island where we are, where we will be. Next to it is the island called Panay. In 1900, Baptist missionaries arrived in Panay, not just one, not just two, but many, a whole team of them, and God blessed their ministry in amazing ways. So when you look at these islands in the north, it's predominantly Roman Catholic. Okay, the Spanish brought Roman Catholicism to the Philippines in the 1600s, so it's ingrained there. In the south, that light blue Mindanao area, that's Muslim. I have been told repeatedly, you either cannot go there, or if you do, make sure that you have Filipinos with you, and then there are certain parts where you absolutely cannot go there. I'm not saying I wouldn't go, I'm just saying that's what I've been told. And then in the middle, that green area, the Visayan area, this is where, at least parts of it, are where the gospel has flourished. So in Negros Island, the boot, that the gospel went from Panay over to the boot, to Negros, in marvelous ways. So that now, on just that island, on just the one half, there are over 1,000 like-minded Baptist churches. When I went there last November, I preached in a missions conference in one of the churches in the capital city of this island, Bacolod. And I took a video, I don't have it here, I have it on my phone, but I took a video of the 200 Christian workers, missionaries, and pastors who came from other places, all Filipino though, who were there at this conference. So, churches in America, our churches are shrinking. Churches, not all of them, but the majority of them. Churches in this part of the world are not shrinking. They are growing, and they are planting new churches, and they are expanding, and they are sending out their own missionaries. We think we're kind of like, you know, have the, we have the corner on the market of missionaries. Not so. The church that I preached in, they have themselves planted, they're approaching 25 churches planted out of their church in the Philippines. They have, I think it's 18 Filipino missionaries that they support and have sent out. I know one church, a different church, but this pastor preached in our church in Sheboygan. Their church alone has sent 5 missionary couples to the country of Laos, a country Americans cannot enter other than just on a temporary visa. They have sent 5 couples to Laos who have planted 5 churches there. Honestly, I could, you know, go on and on. I met missionaries at this conference who are Filipino, and they are missionaries to multiple countries in Africa, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia. I mean, I could just keep going. Literally met a guy who is a missionary to a tribe. Now, this one's in the Philippines, but a tribe in the Philippines that just a generation ago were headhunters, literally. So we think missions, we are the mission sending place. We are, but we're being overtaken. In the year 2000, the average conservative church, this is a stat from Lifeway Ministries, the average conservative church like ours had 137 people in attendance. It's across America only, just the United States. In the year 2000, the average church, 137 people. 22 years later, same churches, can you guess what the average was? 67. That's real. Those are the same. Those are real stats. Your church is unusual in that it's growing. Most churches in America, we're talking good churches, are shrinking. So the ability to send missionaries is getting harder and harder. One of the ways that the Lord is working is He's still here. He's still working. Our churches are blessed. We're still a rich country. We can do a lot with missions. But one of the things that's happening is that as the gospel hit the ground over 100 years ago in Panay and now Negros, it's in Cebu. So those 3 islands right in the heart of the Philippines are covered with gospel preaching, conservative churches like ours, covered with them. And they are asking us, would you please come and start a new location? We have Tacloban, Leyte. It's off to the right there. That's where General Douglas MacArthur, World War II, said, I shall return. He returned to that city. That's where his boots first hit the beach. So they're asking us to come. Place in Cebu asking us. Mindanao asking us, would you open a seminary? These pastors all go to a Bible college, and it's estimated that when they're done with their 4 years of training, they have the equivalent in America of completing a freshman year. They are not that knowledgeable. They're not ignorant, they're not dumb, but they just don't have the access to books. They don't have, books cost money. They don't have any money. They make $5 a day. It's really hard to survive when you live at all. The poverty levels in these places are high. So they can't buy the books. They don't know a lot about even just basic things like how to interpret scripture and pointers on preaching and so forth. They're very good with people. They're really good with shepherding, but those hard skills that need to be learned, they struggle with. So they've been asking repeatedly, would you please come and start? So Mark Kittrell, our president, is on the island of Negros for many years, and properties gifted to them. They started a camp. They're about 2,500 young people who come to the camp every summer. There are about 200 who make professions of faith every year there. One of the purposes of the camp is evangelistic. And they started a seminary there about 5 years ago, just before COVID. COVID shut it down. You thought we were stringent here in America? Wow. The Philippines was hyper stringent. So it basically shut us down for about 2 years. It's been restarted, but now, because of distances, there's a location in the middle of the island. I'll talk about it in a second. And then the northern part of the island and the southern part. So Haven of Grace Seminary was launched about 6 years ago. This is the location. It's on the Sulu Sea, so it's literally beachfront. This is where the camp is. This building totaled the whole cost of it. Has a full basketball court underneath, a roof and a cantina and all kinds of stuff. It cost $50,000 to build. It's not very expensive to build there. But this building here houses the seminary that's in the middle. But the capital city needed a seminary. There are over 250 like-minded Baptist churches just in the city of Bacolod. Now, that's not because of church splits. Absolutely not. This is because of church planting. And the question might be, you know, in greater Milwaukee, that's, what, 1.6 million people in the greater Milwaukee area. How many churches? I guarantee you there aren't 250 like-minded Baptist churches in all of Milwaukee. So we're talking just 600,000 at night, a million people during the day in Bacolod City. Why so many churches? Well, if you don't have a car, you don't have a motorcycle, average family has over five kids there, so you have five, six kids. It costs 1 peso per person to get on a jeepney, a motorcycle with a sidecar. You pack your family on this jeepney, and you have to pay a peso, and that driver can only take you, by city law, can only take you like a quarter of a mile, and they have to stop. If they go past that, they're breaking the law and can lose their license. So you have to pay a peso. If you have you, your wife, five kids, that's 7 pesos just to go part of the way. So let's say you have to go halfway across the city. You're looking at way more money than you could possibly afford just to get to church. They need 250 churches in the city, maybe more, just to reach the people there. And so it gives you an idea of the amount, the reason for, part of the reason for the amount of churches. So in this picture, this is Maranatha Baptist Church. This is the site of our location in the north. The man to the right is actually the vice president of our seminary, to my left, but to your right in the picture, Jun Ogila. Amazing brother. I love him. I hope we can get him over to the U.S. sometime and you can meet him and his wife and some other Christian leaders there. But he is the senior pastor of Faith Baptist Church, about 500 people, on a Sunday morning. Here's a picture of me with some of the students who were in the class after the class. This is Haven of Grace Seminary. So the first location is in the middle. Second location is in the capital city, Bacolod. A third location was opened all the way down in the south. So one of the men who was attending classes, senior pastor of a Baptist church down there, his name is Marjun Decatoria. He said, look, we're from a small city, but there are 50 pastors who are poor as Job's turkey. They literally cannot afford. I can barely afford to get up there once in a while. They cannot afford to make it's about a 4.5 hour bus ride from where they are to our middle location. Would you please come and start a seminary? Mark prayed about it, talked with them, met with a number of them. So first class we have, there are 50 pastors in that. So we're trying to get things up and running down there after COVID. And it is going. We are now offering classes once again. But those are our three locations. Then, a few years back in the country of Myanmar, we were asked to restart a seminary. All right, so where is the highest percentage per capita of Baptist people? What country do you think has the highest percentage of Baptists in the world? Number one is the United States. Number two is India. William Carey, Baptist missionary, father of modern missions. There are a huge amount of Baptists, especially in the southern part of India. Do you know what country is third? It's actually not the Philippines. It's actually because of an American Baptist missionary, first American foreign field missionary named Adoniram Judson, who went to Myanmar. So the third highest per capita of your population for Baptists is actually this country. So this country is in the middle of a war. It's been going on for a while between the rebel army and the official army of the country. And so we're kind of stuck in Yangon right now. So there are only 11 students there currently. There are over 70 students in the three locations full-time students in the Philippines. I'll explain India in a moment. But in Myanmar, currently we have 11. So our director, he had a PhD from the West. He died of COVID because it was too dangerous to go to the hospital. He was afraid of being shot by the rebels. So he actually got COVID and died of pneumonia. Very sad. We have four nationals who are still there teaching. And here is the building, small building. But then here is a picture of our 11 students. And yes, some of the men do have their, almost like a kilt, but they're longer. They actually have their traditional, we would call them dresses, but they're not like a woman's dress. They have like a pleat in the middle. But anyway, so these are our men at work. And then a couple of years ago, we agreed to work with a man. His name is Dr. Tia Longcomer, who asked us a number of times, would you come and start a school in our region of Guwahati? So as you look at India here, the southern part of India, so basically the bottom half, has a massive amount of Baptist churches in it. Huge amounts. In fact, one of the men in our church, whose dad is a pastor in a different part of our state, his dad has been supporting, because his dad, he became a pastor recently, had a business, so he's been supporting two leper colonies, planted churches in two leper colonies in India. They still have Hansen's disease there. It's not eradicated, so there are real lepers there still. But anyway, they just got back. Dan's first time, the guy from our church and his son, first time to India ever with their dad. And they're reporting just a crazy amount of Christians in churches in this area. There are colleges and seminaries in the southern part of India that are 400, 500, 600 students. So in that part of India, there's no need for another Baptist college or seminary. There are plenty of them. In the northern part, though, where it's Hindu, there's almost nothing. Okay, now there aren't many Muslims there because after World War II, when the British pulled out, what did they do? They forced almost all the Muslims to leave India and go to Pakistan, and they forced almost all the Hindus in Pakistan, what is now the British drew the line. So what was Pakistan, they forced them to move to India. So there were millions of people on the road after World War II as the British were about to pull out. With everything they could carry on carts, you know, going back and forth. So there aren't many Muslims in the northern, but it's heavily Hindu, and they hate Christians. So when you hear about the beatings and the persecution, it doesn't happen usually in the south, it's in the north. So yeah, there's needs there, but where was there, as far as I know, there was only one other school in this region where we also now are, and that is in Guwahati. So the school that is there, really solid school, is in Manipur, but there was nothing in Nagaland. Okay, now you may know this, but India has over 600 languages. They have lots and lots of tribes. They don't necessarily cross tribal boundaries. It can be pretty dangerous. Our seminary works with two tribes. Now it's a Bible college and a seminary. Technically, right now it's a Bible college. We're about ready to launch the seminary as well. But in this region, we work with a Naga tribe and a second tribe called the Ao, spelled A-O, tribe. There are the spellings, Ao and the Naga tribe. So we exist here and in all of our places to train pastors, church planters, and missionaries who are indigenous peoples to work among their own. So the Ao tribe by itself has 600,000 people. The Naga is even larger. Our national director, Dr. Tia Longcomer, is, I believe he's like married to Naga, but he's Ao. So he straddles, you know, both of those. He has a PhD. He just translated himself, finished it during COVID when there was the lockdown. He just finished translating the entire Old and New Testaments into the Ao language. It's the first Bible ever for this tribe in their own language. And we raised the funds and printed, I think, 10,000 copies to be given first to pastors and so forth, and then others. So there's still a need for more copies, but we're doing what we can. But this brother is, he's a sweet brother. So he is our on-site director. We have dormitories. You can see the building there. We're renting it. But we have dormitories that only can hold about 80 students. So we only allow 20 students in per year. So year one, we ended up with only 14 students. Year two, word has gotten out of what's happening. And I think we had 38 students or something who applied. I think we took a little more than 30, like 33, because we had extra room from the first year. But we can only take 20 per year, and now the demand is getting greater. And pastors who do have already an undergraduate degree are asking, could we also start a seminary, which we hope to launch in 2 years. All right, so the needs here in this area are high. Finally, there's one other location where we are. So you can see, I like the colors on this map. It helps you to identify Nepal and Bhutan and Bangladesh. And, of course, the Tibet region of China. It's not Tibet technically, I guess, anymore. China, took over the Tibetan region and now control it. But Nepal, Bhutan, and Bangladesh. So we have a seminary that's right in the middle. The city is smaller. Well, when we say smaller, small in India is under 200,000. So anyway, Siliguri is located right here. It's next to the Nepalese border. It's really close to Bhutan. We have 14 students there. This is not a full-fledged seminary. It's technically a teaching site. So as we are able to offer a class, we do. And so once, you know, we get our support raised, I'll be going to all six of these locations every year, teaching a class, helping mentor and disciple, and then teaching leaders how to do the work so that I can work myself out of a job eventually. But our 13 of our 14 men are hoping to go into Nepal or Bhutan to plant churches. Now, in addition to the six locations, which currently we're barely holding together, all right? The demands of what I need to do, I'm already doing it, all right? I'm a full-time pastor. I'm just about ready to launch into missions. I mean, the demands are huge. But so we can't take on another site right now. But do you realize we have two places in Pakistan? We have one in Nepal, another in Bangladesh, three more in the Philippines, a location in the Solomon Islands. All of these places have gobs of churches. Actually, Nepal does not. Pakistan, not as many. I know you think Pakistan Muslim doesn't have. I mean, you go to the city of Lahore, and there are lots of Baptist churches there. I know it sounds strange, but it's true. I interact directly with a pastor of a Bible college. He's a pastor and the director of a Bible college there. We're not connected with them, but they want us to come and start a seminary. The needs are huge. Someone has said there are about 50 men with doctorates all aiming for one position in an American undergraduate Bible college or seminary. I don't know if that number is accurate, but it's probably not too far off. We could use those other 49 desperately to go over to help us with the training. So our goal is to work ourselves out of a job. This is Siliguri. The man in the green shirt is the on site. I don't know if I want to quite call him director, because again, this is just a teaching site. It's not technically a seminary. We're not offering regular classes there just as often as we can get. We don't have a building. The classes are literally offered there. By the way, if you think that going over to these places is a vacation, wow, it's hard. Okay, living in these places as an American, where they eat with their hands, they don't have utensils, the food is foreign, you feel sick often. I got pretty sick, even in the Philippines. It's hot. Every time I speak, I'm taking my glasses off about every 3 minutes because the sweat is stinging my eyes. It's just that hot. There's not one air conditioner in any of those over 1,000 churches in the Philippines. They don't have air. They can't afford it. They can't afford the air conditioner. They couldn't afford the electricity, which is expensive there. So very primitive conditions here in Siliguri, but worth it to go there for these men who are amazing brothers in Christ. So what's my job description? My title is Coordinator of Education and Missions Representative. About 6.5 months a year, Maria and I will be traveling overseas. We'll drop into each of the sites, spend time in each site. I'll teach a block course at each site. We have men there who serve as vice president or registrar or director. And they've never done this before. They don't know, what does a registrar fully do? What should I be doing as a dean? They don't know. So right now things are, I know because I was, at Northland for so many years teaching and also as dean. So I know the teaching side and the academic, the back side of the quilt. I know that part too. And I go over there, I'm just like, Lord, help me, help me. I don't know how I'm going to get this place, up and running. And it's not just me by myself. But it's like, oh, there's a lot to do. If we really want to have a well-run place that can be within, and our goal's 20 years, I don't know if we can pull it off that quickly, but because I'll probably be long, I'm an old geezer, right? So I'll be long dead and I'm hopefully teasing, hopefully. But, within about 20 years, we hope that at least some of these locations are going to be free of Western need. I was a board member at a Baptist college in the Caribbean for a number of years, and we were about ready to transfer all the leadership that started in 1956, Baptist missionaries. The white missionaries controlled everything all the time. And even the national pastors and leaders never had authority. So we were slowly giving them authority and helping them, learn. And we talked with one large Baptist board and the director of education for them. And we asked them, hey, how do you do this? How many colleges or seminaries have you successfully transferred to the nationals? And he stopped and thought for a bit and then said, zero. Every time we tried it, it failed. We tried it. In 2 years, the college was gone. The property's still there, but no students, no faculty. Why? Because it was run like Americans run it. And it needed from the beginning to have, some Western support, but the nationals in leadership from the beginning. So I go over to these schools, and I'm just like, things are... fires here and there, that all these things need. And I'm thinking like a Westerner and it's a different world and they're doing it their way. And I have to figure out, okay, what is the most important? What are the things that need to be done? What are the things that, okay, this is cultural. I need to shut my mouth here. I need to just be quiet. I'm just a dumb American. I don't understand all the parts. So these are the kinds of things that are going through my mind as coordinator of education. So we'll be on site over about half a year, a little more than half a year, traveling in doing this. And then the other little less than half a year, I'm a missions representative for Pacific Rim Missions International for our board. So I'll be traveling to churches, conferences, colleges, and seminaries to tell people what's going on. I'm teaching a new class every year. Each time I teach, I will write a full syllabus. So I taught just the book of James, 150, 8.5 by 11 single space pages. So that's, you know, it's easily a 150 page book, more like 200. So I'll be writing one of those for each classes. So that's a 6 month endeavor by itself of concentrated time. So when I'm back in the States, I'll be studying and writing. I'll be hopefully recruiting teachers to help us. Have a, you know, one of my former students, really good preacher, teacher at his church where he's a pastor. His name's Chad. Chad, why don't you come every other year to the Philippines and teach the same class in each of our three sites? Would you do just one class for us like that? So those are the kinds of conversations I'm already starting to have to fill out different courses that are going to be offered. And once our men over there are trained, then they can start teaching some of these classes. But they're already involved in leadership, and then soon, hopefully, in a few years, we'll be able to start taking some of the teaching load. But anyway, about a little more than half of the year over there, a little less than half of the year here. When I'm here, I'll be representing the mission. I'll be visiting supporting churches who support us individually. I'll be answering email, developing the schools at a distance, helping men in the 6 spots and maybe additional spots eventually, probably not that far into the future, to get off the ground and so on. Developing the seminaries by mentoring the national leaders. I'll be recruiting qualified faculty, and then representing the board, as I've already said, in those places. So I'm not going to go through the full mission statement. I've kind of already said it, but let me just say the need is great. I've already said a lot of what's in this slide. We have to figure out, a lot of things here. There are a lot of moving parts that I'm still figuring out and working on. But Mark asked me to come because basically 20 years of pastoral experience in 3 churches, including planting 1 church, taught for 17 years and was in administration for 12, and a lot of experience with traveling overseas to a number of countries. So, you know, he needed someone who had those 3 pieces in his background, 4 pieces actually, including the travel, to help them with the education. So as hard as it is to leave church, to leave the pastorate, we felt that this was God's will. So Northland, church, and now the last part of our lives, the Lord willing, here will be serving. It's critical mission. We need more teachers to help. As churches in America are shrinking, these churches are growing. I mean, in America, we're like one of the weirdest countries demographically. Most first world or developing world countries demographically are like this. The Zemkes are here. Japan is right at the top of the list, where there are 4, could we say, older people who are retired. For every 3 working age above 50, for 2 who are under. For all of history, it's a pyramid like this. Until the Industrial Revolution, people left the farms. Free labor when you have kids, so you have lots of kids. You move into a small apartment in the city to work, and kids are not only expensive, but when you have a really small place and they make a lot of noise, you don't have as many of them. So the developing world went like this within about 50 years. Japan is near, it's going to be a ghost country, because they don't allow immigration for the most part. They're going to be like a ghost country. It's why they're the only country on earth that has a national robotics. They've had it for over a decade, national robotics policy to develop robots so that they can actually turn people in nursing homes, do meal preparation at restaurants. I mean, the whole thing, they lead the world in that. Why? Because they're a dying country. Russia's dying. China is, if anybody's worse than Japan, it's possibly China. They're in horrible situation. America's weird because America has the boomer generation, which is huge. And then we have my generation, the Xers, much smaller. But then the boomers had a lot of kids, which this is rare. We actually have a lot of millennials. So there's a big boomer and a big millennial, but a small Xer. And then my kids, well, my oldest is the last year of the millennials. And then my other three kids, they're all the Zoomers, Generation Z. So here's what's happened in America. 85% of the older people who are dying off, more than half of them now are on Social Security retired. That generation of boomers, 85% of them went to church. Now, that doesn't mean a good church, gospel preaching church, but 85% went to church. With the Xers, it's way less. With the millennials, only 15% of millennials go to any kind of a church of any kind. So why are churches going from 137 people to 67 in attendance, same churches just like ours? Again, you're bucking the trend in that you're growing, but why are the churches going gray-haired and not seeing the youth? It's because there aren't any out there. Or the ones who are, if they are in church, a lot of them are leaving, and we're not reaching the millennial generation, and certainly not the Zoomers either. So, churches in America, shrinking. Missions giving in America, shrinking. Amount of missionaries overseas, coming home, shrinking. The future, I'm not saying, I don't want to paint it too bleak, right? I mean, God is still here. There are amazing, unless the government starts doing things to churches that, you know, force us into hiding or something like that. I mean, we're still going to be sending missionaries, a good number of them. But who's going to pass us in a hurry? It's India. It's Southeast Asia. It's China. It's the Philippines and places like this. So what do they need? I mean, some of those places desperately need church planters. Some of those church planters will be Americans. Others will be Filipino or Indian. But what also do they need? They need education. They're begging for it. So this is what we're trying to do. In a second here, I'll give you some Q&A time, but let me show you a couple things first. We have a sign-up sheet here. If you would like to begin to receive our emails, if you would like to add us to your prayer list, and I would really encourage you, mean it with full sincerity. I've seen God do some things over my lifetime that I thought were impossible, and they were matters of prayer. I really would covet your prayer. So if you're interested, please sign up here, give us your email, and I will begin sending out our email. And then also, if you are interested in potentially supporting us, I don't like selling myself. It just makes me uncomfortable, but it's part of what God's asked me to do. So, mission directors today say that missionaries receive now only half of their support directly from churches. And then the other half is from individuals. 40 years ago, it was close to 100% from churches and a small percentage from individuals. But that's not the case anymore. As churches are shrinking, they can't, you know, support as many missionaries. So 50% of support comes directly from the churches, 50% from individuals. So if you are, I'm not begging, the Lord will take care of us, but if you are interested in potentially supporting us, take one of these folders. It's on the back table there. On the inside, it will have some more information about us. It will have a form here that explains, a page that will explain how you could support us with a one-time gift. If you would like to, do something monthly, a small amount of money monthly, there's a way to fill out a form here and have us, whatever the amount you would want, taken directly out of your checking account. And then there's also a self-addressed stamped envelope. So any missions funds that we receive don't go directly to us. I mean, you could give us some money, but it's just easier. It's probably better for them to go through the proper channels for tax purposes. So our money will be sent not to Pacific Rim missions because we've chosen not to charge our missionaries anything. So most mission boards charge their missionaries on average 10% of the amount they raise go to supporting the missionaries because of just all the expenses of the home office. We have zero expenses at our home office because we don't have a full-time treasurer. He's part-time. He owns his own business. He actually has stage 4 cancer right now. He's battling it. And our director said, Kurt, we just cannot add more to RJ's plate. So find a different way for support, for you to receive support. So I started doing research, found out that if I go to any bookkeeping service, I have to pay either 5% or 6% of the full amount that comes in just for the bookkeeping service. I'm like, there has got to be a better way. So I talked with one of my friends, who is one of my former students, who's the vice president of one of the America's largest Christian law firms, National Center for Life and Liberty. He said, Kurt, we could do it for you for 1%. I'm like, ooh, that'd be way better. So I only have to pay 1% now for the money to be collected. But any support that you would send would go to the National Center for Life and Liberty. At the end of each year, they will cut me a 1099 form, so it's all above board, all tax. And if you're interested in supporting us, we would definitely appreciate it. You can pick up one of these blue folders on the back. Pastor Josh, how much time? Am I like 2 minutes left? 3 minutes left. Now it's down to two, just because of my pause. All right, how about a question, maybe two? Yes, sir.
Since you're going to be earning part of your, being overseas part of your time,
yeah,
for tax purposes, can you not have to claim that as U.S. income?
Doesn't work. I wish. Doesn't work like that. Yeah. Yeah, I started looking into it, and over $16,000 a year just for FICA. Now, you pay that out of your paychecks. Your employer takes that amount. I mean, maybe not half of that amount. But for all self-employed, like, you know, Justin, you would know, I mean, it's crazy. Anyway, so enough about taxes. I'm not here to complain. Do all things without grumbling. And so I don't want to complain. But I'm just saying, as an American missionary, just understand that your missionary, because my total support is a little less, that I'm raising is a little less than $96,000 a year, which sounds like a lot, but to afford the average American home today, you have to make $110,000 between the husband and wife. That's the average home in America just for the payments. Fortunately, I bought mine over 10 years ago, so I'm good. I mean, well, I used to have a mortgage, but I mean, it's not very high by comparison, 3% interest, but it's just reality. So American missionaries, it's so expensive to send us out. Filipino missionaries, they're very cheap. It's crazy. What? You just train them, and then they go on a nickel and a dime. One of the friends that I made over in the Philippines, his family's actually, for the Philippines, they're a wealthy family. They own the Trek bicycle license. So they sell, their family sells bicycles. I don't think it's all of the Philippines, but part of it. So they're a wealthy family. You know what they do? Instead of having a big home and fancy cars, now they have a nice home for Filipino standards, not for us, but instead of a big home and fancy cars, their family supports fully four, and they're taking on a fifth, fully supported Filipino missionary family. So just their family supporting five families. I met a lady medical doctor in Maranatha Baptist Church when I was over there last year. She didn't tell me this, but the pastor did after the fact. As a medical doctor in the Philippines, she doesn't make all that much, but still, for Filipinos, it's a lot. So this church has planted almost 25 churches. They're actively planting two churches right now among plantations, so they grow sugar cane or whatever. And so they're in the process. So they've got church. They have enough people, like 50 or more, to start a church. So this medical doctor lady said, I want to buy the land for the church here. And her sister, who's a medical doctor in the state of Florida, said, who makes a lot more than her other sister in the Philippines, she said, I'll build the building. So an amazing, it's all concrete. Doesn't have air conditioning. Otherwise, I'd always preach there. But anyway, it's a solid, can withstand the hurricanes, all concrete building, amazing place. Again, Filipino money, totally supported. So it's amazing what God's doing there. We think it's all about America. It's not. So they just need trading. We need to get it. One more question, Brother Larry. Yep. So our original plan, our sending church is going. We left our church, or we're, well, not quite. We're leaving. May 12th is our last day, last Sunday. And I've just seen too many horror stories about the senior pastor from before staying and making life really difficult for the next pastor. So I decided a year ago that we weren't going to do that. He's a younger guy, wonderful guy, four little kids. But I know our people love us, and I know what's going to happen. He's going to want to do things, and people are going to say, Pastor Kurt, what are you doing? No, I've already told everybody, and I'm going to say it again. Don't tell me anything about, you know, anything bad or whatever decisions that are made. You're not allowed to talk to me. Talk to me about anything else, but don't do that. So we've decided to leave the church. So we were going to actually physically move to Green Bay. We're about to become at the end of May, members at Bay City Baptist Church. Some of you know Bay City. So we're going to become members at Bay City Baptist Church. The senior pastor there is one of my former students, Pastor Ray Anderson. Love the Andersons. So it's a really good fit for us. And so I was going to live in Green Bay until I started looking at housing and looking at how little my mortgage is and my 3% interest versus that. And we're just like, I can't afford to move, at least not for a couple of years. So we'll live in our house in Sheboygan. We'll commute up to Bay City every opportunity we have. But for at least the first couple of years as we're raising support, I won't be there very often, maybe in December, because churches don't usually want missionaries to come in, you know, at the Christmas time. So we'll probably be there three or four Sundays a year until we have support raised, and then we'll be there a little more.